and welcome to David's Book Talk. Today we're going to talk to a new mystery author. He's got his first mystery that just came out. It's called Death Notice, and his name is Todd Ritter. Hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm just fine. You sound like you're having a good day. It's a beautiful sunny day here, a little cold, but I'm not ready for the winter. Are we ever ready for the winter?
No, but I kind of need the winter.
Is that a good writing environment for you, the winter?
I do a lot of my writing in the winter, yeah, because it's good time to just, you know, huddle up and with some coffee and just type away.
Hey, I'm reading the new Patricia Cornwell, and it takes place in the winter time. I'm thinking, oh, snow. I don't even want to think about snow. And when you're reading it, you feel that snow, and you remember all the snowstorms you've been through, and you think, oh, I don't want to. I hate the snow. Yeah, you know? I don't mind the snow as long as I don't have to drive in it.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. I love it when, you know, there's a blizzard out and I don't have to go anywhere for 3 days.
Oh, that's
but when there's a blizzard on the way and I know I have to drive an hour to work, it's like, oh no, don't snow, please.
Now this, I want to talk about Death Notice, of course, but we'll talk about other things too, but. Death Notice is just a really cool first mystery. I mean, it's one of these books you just read, and this is talking about snowy nights. This is a great book to read on a snowy night because it's scary. I mean, there are parts that are just like, oh man, you know what's going to happen. And tell people a little bit about what the book's about.
Well, it takes place in a small town in Pennsylvania called Perry Hollow, and it has never had a murder before. It is probably the smallest, most boring town you could ever encounter. And the police chief is a single mom named Kat Campbell. And one day she discovers a coffin on the side of the road. And in the coffin is a local farmer who's been murdered. His lips have been sewn shut. And it appears that the killer tried to embalm him. So that sends, you know, the whole town for, you know, a loop. And then it turns out that the killer sent the local newspaper the victim's death notice before he was killed. And the recipient of that was the obituary writer named Henry Gall, who leads a very quiet life. He, you know, stays away from pretty much all human contact, and he has good reason to. And in the midst of all this, they bring in a state police investigator named Nick Donnelly, who is currently tracking down a serial killer known as the Betsy Ross Killer because of his talent with a needle and thread. And so all three sort of, you know, join forces to try to figure out who did this heinous murder. And at the same time, more death notices keep being sent to the newspaper and more victims keep coming.
Now, you write about a woman character. You have a woman character as your main character. Why is that? I mean, you would think, being a man, you would write a man character. Is it going to be tougher for you to write a woman character? Because this is going to be a series, right?
Yeah.
Is it tougher to write a woman, not being a woman?
It wasn't, to be honest. And the reason I did it was because the first character I had in mind was Henry, the obituary writer.
He's a great character in the book. In fact, he's one of my favorites in the book.
Thank you. And I wanted to have someone, I knew I needed to get police involved in some manner, and I wanted to have someone who was sort of the opposite of Henry. Henry's very tall, very strong, very solitary, and I figured, you know, what better way than have a female police chief who's short, but she's outgoing, and she's tough, and that's sort of how Kat was born.
Now, are you like Henry? Is Henry a part of you? I mean, are there things that you put in Henry that you are?
A little bit. I think there's a little bit of myself in all of the characters. But the one I actually sort of is most like me, or I say that it's the person that I would like to be most like, is Kat. She's the one that I can relate to the mm-hmm. best. And I think maybe that's why I didn't have much trouble writing from her point of view.
Interesting. Because I know, I've always told Lisa Scottolini when I've talked to her, I always say, why don't you write, you know, you kind of hit the, it would be great to see you write a man character as a main character, see what you would do with it. But she identifies too much with being a woman. I think when you do that, it's hard to write from a man's perspective when you're not a man, to be
well,
quite
it's
honest.
Funny. At, I was at BoucherCon in San Francisco, and I went to, it was a panel with Louise Penny, Reese Bowen, and Deborah Crombie.
Oh, how cool.
And all three were talking about how, you know, women write men better than men write women, and I just felt like standing up and saying, I beg to differ.
Right, let them read your book.
Yeah.
How hard was this book to get published? I mean, have you been working on it for years, or is it, was it a, how did, how, what was the process like?
It was very long, very winding. The book went through a lot of versions to get the point where it's at right now.
Well, the thing I like most about the book is it's very easy to read. I mean, it's a very simple story. I mean, complex in some ways, but easy to follow. I've read other mysteries, and there was another one that I won't mention the author's name, but it was a little too complex. There were like three different crimes in the book, and before you know it, you can't figure out what's what and who did what to whom, and just when you think you have it all figured out, there's a little twist at the end, and everything goes haywire, you know, which is interesting, but it's hard to follow. And how many of us like that feeling when you get to the end of the book and you don't know what's going on? You're still not sure how it really ended.
Yeah.
So, and that just frustrates me no end, and I always feel like I have to write to the author, and in this case, I did write to the author, and didn't get a good resolution. I still don't know. And then you have to go back and read it again. But your book is very easy to understand. By the end, you know exactly what's happening, you know exactly who did what to who, and that makes it so wonderful.
I really set out to write, well, one, a book that I wanted to read. Like, that was like my first main goal, was just, I'm going to spend so much time working on a book, and I really have no idea why I wanted to write a book. People ask me that, and I still can't.
You don't really have a good answer, huh?
Yeah, it's because, I guess. Why not? And I set out to write the book that I would have loved to have read. And so part of that was just, I wanted to make it just a darn good read. Like, I just wanted to entertain the heck out of people. I wanted them to be thrilled, entertained, scared. And so,
I mean, after you read this book, you're never going to, every time you hear the whir of the fax machine, you're going to think.
Yeah.
I know I will. Because that's some of the best parts of the book, is when you hear the fax machine going. Because you know what's coming.
You're like, oh, who's next?
Right. And we I don't want to give too much away, because people who haven't read it's too good to give anything away. But when you read, when you know what I'm talking about, you realize how wonderful it is, and it just makes the book even more fun, because you know there's more coming.
Oh yeah.
And you know, it just can't end that way. And it's a point with mysteries. I mean, I remember reading a mystery once. I think it was by Robin Hathaway, and there were like 20 people that died in the book. I mean, it was unbelievable. It was like everybody was getting killed. And in a way, it was fun, but after a while, you know, when you have that many people killed, it loses some of its authenticity. You know what? Well, I can't say that right. Authenticity. Because you don't, like, nobody, they wouldn't have that many people die, you know?
Yeah.
There's a fine line between reality and having fun killing people.
And there was fun in writing it, in terms of, there was a little bit of playing God, where, you know, I had established this town, I had established the people in the town, and I could sort of pick and choose, like, who do I want to kill next? And then there were some cases where, you know, I would kill a character and then regret it, so then I'd bring them back in a fight.
Well, and that's the point. Karen Slaughter did that. She killed one of her main characters off and got a huge backlash about it. And, you know, that it's so, you have to be so careful when you're doing a series that you don't kill off a really favorite character. You could lose a lot of fans doing it.
Yeah, well, do you watch the show Castle?
Yes.
He did that, I guess, in the, you know, the very first episode. He just killed, like, his main character from, like, this whole series. And I was just watching it going, this is so unrealistic, because there would be such a huge backlash against him right now.
Let's face it, as much as TV's fun to watch, the way they do characters just isn't like the like books. And you can so much more with characters in books than you can. And the problem with TV is it moves so fast, you know, and you find out little things, but sometimes they tease you too much. And, you know, as much as, and don't get me wrong, I love to watch TV, but, you know, I feel that a lot of characters on TV are very cardboard, whereas reading a book like Death Notice and other mysteries, you get the feel of the characters. And I mean, this is going to be a series. I mean, do you plan this to be like a 10-book series? I mean, do you have any idea how many are going to be in the series? Do you think about that?
I only really kind of focus on what's going to be the next book. But at the same time, there's always in the back of my head, you know, what can I do down the road to this town, to these characters? You know, there's sort of like two thought processes going on. The main one is, okay, we got to get this next book written. What's going to go down? But then there's always that, what if I did this, you know, in like the fifth book, and then that would set up the sixth book to do this? Wouldn't that be cool?
Now, do you put clues? Do you think that, I'm trying to remember if there's any clues in the book to who's done it. I think there probably are, and I missed them. But do you consciously put clues in there?
Oh yeah.
I guess you have to with the mystery nowadays. You really have to have clues because then the reader will say it's not fair if they couldn't figure out who did it.
Exactly, and because that's just the way I write. I'm probably like the most anal retentive planning writer out there in that I plot everything from start to finish before I even write a word.
Which is probably the best way to do it. I mean, you really have to know where it's going. You can't have, you know, you can't decide in the middle of a story that it's not going to be one killer and it's going to be another and somebody else is going to be the killer. You know, how can you do that?
Yeah, and some writers do and it works for them and, you know, more power to them. For me, I need to see exactly where I'm going because that way I can do plant those little seeds and clues throughout the book.
Is writing fun for you? I mean, was this whole process of writing this book fun, or were there days where you're like, you just feel like it's, you know, too repetitive, or too much work?
There were both. Like there were some times where I just had such a blast writing it, and like I would go to bed, and because I do plan out everything, I'd know what I'd be writing the next day. And I'd be like, you know, not being able to sleep because I can't wait to write the scene tomorrow. It's going to be so much fun. And then there were other days where you're just almost pounding your head against the keyboard going, why won't this come out right? What is wrong with me?
Right. So you have your doubts. I mean, I guess every writer has doubts at some point.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't get easier.
Yeah, I mean, you look at the way they crank books out, some of the writers that are, I mean, Nora Roberts, I always think of Nora Roberts first, I don't know why, but writing so many books, and you think, how in the world does this woman do it? What does she do, just write all day, every day? And writing, it's got to be a very tedious thing at times. I mean, going back over the story over and over and over, and I know you talked about how going over your book over and over and over again, after a while, you just want to get away from it.
Yeah, I mean, there's no disrespect to the book, but by the end, I'm like, I can't read this anymore. I really can't. It's great. I can't read it anymore.
And I wonder how an author knows when it's finished, when it's completely finished. I mean, do you just say, well, that's as good as I can get it, or do you really get to the point where you know that it's completely done, there's nothing more you can do with it?
Well, in the case of Death Notice, it was when my agent said, okay, we're good.
Oh, your agent said it? Okay.
It was really as simple as that, because I had to do multiple drafts for my agent before, you know, she officially took me on as a client. And you know, she had great editorial advice. And I know some agents don't do that.
That sounds like a good agent to me.
Yeah, you know, she's a great agent. And, you know, it got to that point where she was like, you know what? We're there. Let's send it out. And, of course, you know, my editor at Minotaur also had suggestions and great suggestions.
Well, you think she'll do that with every book, your agent?
I hope so. She didn't do it as much with my second book, which I take that as a good sign that it was pretty solid to begin with. So
you're getting better as you go along.
Yeah. I hope. Knock on wood.
Now, did you read a lot of mysteries before you started writing Death Notice? I mean, were you an avid mystery reader? I mean, people that read mysteries seem to, you know, be very avid with it. I mean, nobody reads one mystery and then writes a mystery. You know?
It's not so much as that. Mysteries aren't the only thing I read. Like, I read so many varied things, you know, nonfiction about the Revolutionary War and, you know, Anne Tyler, who I just think is amazing, to Stephen King, to Laura Lippman, to Dennis Lehane. So there was just, it's a whole big pot of books that I read. And so when I wrote Death Notice, I kind of, I'll admit it, I didn't really quite know what I was doing. I was just doing it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Actually, I read the new Stephen King, the new one with his short stories, and it's quite upsetting. It's one of those books that you read, and you're like, oh, man, there are really people like this in the world. But he's such a great writer. There's something about his ability to really get into the mind of people. I mean, he really has this unbelievable talent to get into other people's minds. You actually feel like you know what they're thinking all the time, and sometimes you don't want to know, but it's
exactly.
It's fascinating. And to me, you know, when you read a mystery, you want to know about this character. You want to know everything, all their fears. You want to know all the backstory. What is it with them? What kind of baggage do they have? And sometimes the more the baggage, the more interesting the book is. But I mean, are your characters going to have that? I mean, are you going to flesh out your characters more as the series goes along? I mean, we're going to find out more about Henry and Kat?
Oh, yeah. Like, I plan on fleshing them out, on having them evolve, giving them new hurdles, and, you know, confronting some past ones. And there are just so many opportunities. Like, for example, you know, Kat, single mom, her son has Down syndrome. The husband was a fellow cop who just left when the baby was, you know, I think 1 year old. He's going to come back at some point. I just don't know when. But, yeah, there's fully in my mind that there are just aspects of all these characters' past that will come back to haunt them.
So you're almost like the reader. You don't know everything that's coming in. I mean, yeah, as you write it, I guess more comes to you. Of course, you said you outlined, so you know what's going to happen in that book. But, I mean, 3 books from now, you have no idea what that fourth book's going to be about.
Right, and it's kind of exciting. It's kind of scary.
It is, but you work it out. Because
yeah.
You, number one, you have to. And number two, it'll be fun to do it. And I'm sure, you know, even though you may lay awake at night wondering, what am I really a good writer? Am I, you know, it's going to happen. It's all going to come together. I mean, you have talent. There's no doubt about that. Just reading Death Notice, I mean, your talent is there. So
thank you so much.
you can take that to the bank because it's there. I mean, I've read mysteries where I get to the 20th page and I'm thinking, I don't know if I can read this book. And we've all had that situation, I'm sure. I'm sure you have too.
Oh, yeah.
Where you just realize, you know, I mean, there's one author in particular who I've tried to read her books, I think, 3 or 4 times. I have never been able to get into anything this woman writes, and that's really unusual. Usually I can read a book, and if it's not great, I can still get through it. I could not get through any of her books, and I don't, it's very strange. And then I had talked to her on the phone, I wanted to interview her, and I thought, well, I can't even read her books, what am I going to do? And, you know, it's very strange. I mean, there are certain people who get published who, in my mind, just still can't write.
And it's sometimes it's just that book or that writer just doesn't connect with you. For example, I don't want to name books, but I will because, one, he's dead, and two, the books are insanely popular, so I know I'm an exception. But The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo.
Yeah.
I tried, and I just, you know, about 50 pages in, I just went, this just isn't for me.
Yeah,
and I know it's for millions of other people, but for me, I just couldn't relate to anything.
The funny thing is about that series, I felt that same way you did, and continued to read the first one, and there's a point in the first one where it just takes off and gets...
That's what I heard. Yeah.
And you probably didn't get to that point. I'm guessing you didn't, but...
I'm going to go back and try, because several people have told me the exact same thing. Like, trust me, there's a moment when it takes off, and you will not stop reading.
Yeah, and I felt that way. And those 3 books are, to me, were just wonderful. I mean, yes, I did feel like you. And I actually put that book down, the first book. I remember putting it aside for probably a month and then coming back to it. And then all of a sudden, bam. And I was reading it before it even became this hugely immense popularity. You know, just unbelievable.
Yeah, it's like a phenomenon.
A national phenomenon. I don't know what finally took it over the edge. I think the advertising, and that's a big thing. But I mean, when you really push your first authors. Now, your agent got you the contract with the. Did you pick the publisher? How does that work? Does the agent just find the publisher? And I mean, you're a perfect fit for St. Martin's because they have so many good authors. But how does that work? How did it work in your case? I guess is what my question is.
I honestly don't know. Like, my agent, and this is another reason why she's great, during the process of submissions, she just said, okay, I'm sending it out. And then she didn't tell me a thing until she could call me and be like, we got a deal. So I didn't have...
Well, how long was that between when she said that and when she actually got the deal?
Let's see.
I'm curious.
4 months? 4 months?
4 months. So you writers out there know that, you know, it's going to take 4 months at least.
Yeah. And in some cases longer. So, and I was grateful for not knowing that, you know, she sent it to X publisher and they declined. Or, you know, she sent it here and they're thinking about it, but it's going to take them 6 months. There was none of that. It was just good news.
That's scary. I mean, there's so many writers out there, and you're putting yourself in, and you've got a good product too, and you know, but it even a good product is not necessarily going to sell with a publishing company. I mean, every publishing company seems to be different. They like certain things, but I mean, St. Martin's takes, you know, they take on a lot of new mystery writers, and they do a great job because there's some really great mystery writers coming out. And you got a really, really good book, so it's nice to hear. They're doing only 4 months. I don't know what the average time is, but But I mean, who knows?
When people ask me about that process, I'm like, I really don't know. I was sort of in the dark the whole time, and I was happily in the dark. I just all I wanted to know was if someone said yes, and someone did, and it turned out to be St. Martin's Minotaur, and I couldn't be happier.
Right.
My agent told me when we got the deal, she's like, this is where you want to be.
Now, do they sign you for more than one book, or do you do a book at a time? I mean, what's it like out there now?
They signed me for two.
Oh, that's good.
And, yeah, so the second one is in the hands of my editor as we speak. Hopefully she's loving it right now. And, you know, then who knows what the future will bring. Hopefully many more books for Minotaur.
It's interesting. You look at this cover. I'm just noticing it now. It looks like the guy's holding a knife. If you look closely, the outline on the front cover, you can see this like jagged edge something on right near his chest.
Yeah, I think he is. Yeah, I don't have a copy with, but I'm pretty sure. Yeah, that he's holding the knife, or maybe it's a scalpel.
Yeah, he's holding something that it looks sharp. It's interesting. I don't know where. Someday I have to interview somebody who does covers, because I'm totally fascinated by why they do some of these covers. Now, obviously, this is, you know, it's supposed to imply that there's newspaper stories on there, and of course it revolves somewhat around the newspaper. But there's other things on here, you know, that are interesting. And why did they put that on there? Why, you know, and that's all you can think of is, what does all this mean together? Does it have a meaning altogether? Does it have a meaning for you when you look at it? I mean, do you see what they were getting at?
Yeah, it has it, because they told me the concept was going to be sort of like the murder board and a police station. Like, what would be on there? And so you've got the wanted poster, the fingerprints, and they asked me what else, because I grew up in rural Pennsylvania in a town very similar to Perry Hollow. And so they asked, well, you're from there, what else would be on that bulletin board? I said, oh, well, a barn with a silo, of course, because they're everywhere. You know, like the pickup truck, because everyone drives pickup trucks. So, yeah, it's a little bit of it's a nice collage of some ordinary things and some very morbid things.
What did you think when you first saw the cover? I mean, what goes through your mind when you see the cover? I know you were happy to be published, and rightly so, but I mean, what goes through your mind when you see it? Did you see this kind of cover coming, or what did you expect?
I had no idea what to expect, and then I saw it, and honestly, just, you know, egotistical writer that I am, I'm like, wow, that title is huge. Look at my name. That's my
right.
name.
Yeah.
Those are the first things that went through my head.
When you were writing this book, what did you find was more difficult than you thought of it? I mean, what were the challenges more so than, I mean, when you think about writing, we all think about, I mean, I think about this, I think, well, if I wrote and, you know, and it would, the words were just flowing, how fun it would be, and I could think of really cool ideas. I mean, was it like that for you, or were there a lot of hard things in writing that you didn't even anticipate?
I didn't anticipate the rewriting involved. I wrote the first draft very quickly, one winter, and it just, I wanted to write a book. It was just a snowy winter, so I just cranked it out very quickly, and I had a lot of fun doing it.
And did you think after you were done that, well, that's done, I've written my book, and now I don't have to do anything else?
Pretty much, yeah. The person that I was. And then when it came time to pitch it to agents, there was a lot of interest, which was nice, but no one agreed that it was quite where it needed to be. And so then started the years-long process of rewriting and taking suggestions from agents, from, you know, first readers, friends, family who read the book, and then trying to whip it into the shape that it is now. And it was a very long, very exhausting process. And there was a point where I thought I'd hit that wall, mm-hmm. where I just was like, this book is not going to get any better. I'm just going to, here's a desk drawer, I'm just going to throw it in there, and I'm done.
And this is where confidence comes in. This is where you just say, well, I'm going to do this now.
Yeah, that's exactly what I did. I just said, this is a darn good idea for a book, and I like it, and it has potential. So I'm gonna ride this till the wheels come off, so to speak. And you know, then that's around the same time that I found my agent, who sort of helped me pinpoint where it needed to go, but I just couldn't see where it needed to go. And once I did, it was just a breeze.
Hmm. That's good. That's good to hear. So yeah, you've gained confidence. Is your confidence level a lot higher today than it was then?
I wish I could say it is, but writing the same book was just, again, another... There's always that nagging self-doubt in the back of my head. Like, are people really going to buy this? Does this make any sense? Is this character working for me? And, you know, even... When I gave it to a good friend of mine she acts as my first reader, she's completely brutally honest about everything.
Mm-hmm.
Even until, like, she called me and said, I love it. I thought that it was just not up to snuff.
Now, this is the second book you're talking about now?
Yeah, the second book.
Oh, now I can't wait to read the second book. Did she think it was better than the first one? Or how did she compare it to the first one? Like, that's always the question, though. Is the second one as good as the first? Or, you know, and as readers, you know, we want to know that, you know. What's it like?
Yeah, she said it was as good as the first. It's very, very different than Death Notice. I'm going to admit that one right up front. I didn't want to, in any way, shape, or form, repeat myself. You know, it's still Cat, it's still Perry Hollow, but it's very different.
Well, you've got the small town, you've got the same characters in the small town, so it could easily become a cozy, but I would never want to see this series become what I consider a cozy, because cozies to me are become boring after a while. You never want a series to become boring. You never want it to be like, oh, the body just falls out of the sky and lands on the ground in the middle of a town, you know, where there's a detective like Miss Jessica Fletcher, where every time she shows up, there's a dead body somewhere.
Well, that's a big challenge that I'm facing, and I'm really excited about meeting this challenge, is to not have it become Cabot Cove.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not a murder a week, you know, because... I want it to remain, yeah, it's sensational in parts, it's melodramatic in parts, and purposely so, but I always want it to be grounded in some kind of reality.
And that brings me to the question, how many people live in your idea, how many people, in your stories, how many people live in Perry Hollow? I mean, how many people are in the town?
I honestly don't know. I only judge it sort of based on the towns that inspired it. It was inspired by three different towns.
Mm-hmm.
Both in Pennsylvania and New Jersey, where I live.
Right.
And so, actually, I'm going to have to look at their population figures and get back to you on that.
I'm just curious. I mean, I would think now, there's a mystery author that I've met recently, and I've read every one of his books, and the author himself lives in a town of 25 people. And I'm thinking, oh, you can't have a series set in a town of 25 people. I mean, you run out of ideas before you know it.
Yeah, like three books and you're out. The town.
And everybody knows everybody else. You have nobody has any secrets. And, you know, and it, 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 You think about it, if you really want a town that small as your series setting,
yeah.
But, some people do, but I mean, then it becomes increasingly difficult to think of new situations. I mean, it's not like you can send a character to the market and he comes home with a dead body. I mean, it just doesn't, that wouldn't make any sense. I mean, that doesn't happen.
No.
So how do you make it authentic? How do you make it real enough that every book where there's a murder, that it makes sense? I mean, it makes perfect sense in Death Notice to me. I mean, it works. It works very well. But my question is, how is the second one going to be just as compelling?
Well, in the second one, it actually has a lot to do with the past. And that was one of the ways I sort of circumvented that Cabot Cove syndrome, is that, you know, let's go back to something that happened 40 years ago. And so, you know, they're still investigating. There's, you know, still heinous crimes that were committed, but it was decades ago. And that presented another challenge, which was, well, how do you still make it compelling?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope I did a good job with that.
Right. I can't wait to read it. I'd love to be able to. I've never been able to do that. Read a book beforehand and tell a writer exactly what I thought. Well, I mean, if I liked it, I love to tell them I liked it. But if there were parts I didn't, you know, to be brutally honest, is you need that as a writer. You need that. But is the person telling you that somebody who you can trust completely? That's it. And obviously, the person you're doing that with must be somebody you do trust.
Okay, but we've been friends for 20 years now.
But if you call up your friend and say, well, I hated it, and list 10 different things you hated about the book, how are you going to feel? But the point is, as an author, in order for you to grow, you have to be able to hear these points of view. You have to be able to hear what people like and what they don't like. If somebody doesn't think it's authentic, somebody doesn't think that it sounds right, or something just is off about the book, then you should know about that.
And you need like those dissenting voices to say, this isn't quite working. Because that's how things become, that's how it gets better.
Absolutely.
But and so that's why I love, you know, when I'm so looking forward to hearing what my editor has to say about the second book, because I know what she suggests will make it just so much better.
Well, what is your ultimate fear as a writer? I mean, what one thing would you say just makes you more afraid than anything else?
To have no one read it. To spend all this time, or actually, silence, I think, would be worse than having no one read it. Having people read it and then hearing nothing.
Mm-hmm. Like they don't care one way or the other.
Right.
That's exactly what Dennis Lehane said. He said that's his biggest fear, is not liking it or hating it, not feeling anything about my writing. His biggest fear.
A giant collective shrug, I think, would just be devastating to me.
I mean, you see people read a book, and they come in the store, and I work in a bookstore, so I know. They open the cover, they read a little bit of it, and maybe they and there have been times, numerous times, all over them say, that's a great book. Because I feel like they're missing out on something that they shouldn't be missing out on. Sometimes they take my word for it, sometimes they look at me like, yeah, who are you? Why are you even coming near me? It's a very dangerous thing to be a bookstore sometimes.
Well, bless you for doing that, because authors need people like that, and that's why one of the things I've discovered is that, you know, when you're a reader, you kind of just, you're only exposed to, well, a lot of typical readers, just whatever's on the, you know, the front table at Barnes & Noble.
Right.
Or whatever is an Amazon pick, or something like that. But now, you know, as a writer, I've been able to meet so many people, you know, the independent booksellers and the book bloggers and the mystery writing community, where there's sort of like this whole underground making recommendations and writing reviews and just telling others, you know, you got to read this book.
Yeah, thank God for word of mouth. I mean, because the people that love them just love to spread the word about it. And, you know, when you got something good, you can't wait to tell other people about it. That's what makes book groups so important and so wonderful. I mean, you sit around there, and if everybody loves the book, you know, let's find another one like that. And that's one of the biggest things about reading. When you read a great book, and then you have to move on to another book, to find one equally as good is so difficult sometimes.
Yeah.
I mean, they're out there, but you got to find them.
Yeah, and it's just, for example, I discovered Harlan Coben through a stranger.
Yeah, I think I've read everything by him except Play Dead. I haven't read Play Dead yet, but...
It was just like, oh, you got to read this book by this guy named Harlan Coben. It's called Tell No One. It's fantastic. Trust me, read it. And I'm like, this guy's insane. Who is this person recommending this book to me?
Right.
But you know what? I went to the bookstore. I picked it up. I'm like, oh, wow, this really does sound good. Read it, loved it. And then I told my mom, hey, this guy named Harlan Coben, you got to read him.
Right. And he built himself all the way from near obscurity all the way up that way. I mean, he was very, very... blessed to have a lot of. He's very good at what he does, and you know, yes, there's a bit of repetitiveness about some of the stories later on. I mean, it becomes you suddenly realize that he's writing the same kind of things, but with a different twist, a different. But he does it so well that you almost don't notice it.
And he makes it look effortless in the way he just spins like these really complex. Know, this is unrelated to this, but it actually is. You just don't realize it yet, and the complexity just keep building and building.
And the thing is, with an author, and I never want you to get this way, some of the authors become so popular that it doesn't seem to matter anymore what they write. It's just getting the name out there. Get the name out there. Get people to buy it because they know the name, and it doesn't really matter how good it is. I mean, you never want to get to that point. I mean, and I've seen authors do it, and it really makes me mad because they don't spend as much time as they should with a book. And you know, some authors get 2-3 books a year, and I'm like, after a while, it's like you're just diluting it. People are just gonna get tired of you. And believe me, readers do notice when a book is not as good as it could be.
And I told my agent this, where I just said, you know, trust me on this. I will never, ever, ever put my name on something that I don't think is the best that I can possibly do. It might not be any good. People might hate it, but it's the best that I can do with this book.
Well, if you're not being true to yourself, then there's a big problem.
Right.
And it's not going to come. The reader's going to know it. I mean, the reader's going to know when you're just trying to make a book. And that's, you know, I have no problem with authors making a book. But, you know, if it's something that I don't want to read, I'm not going to recommend it to anybody else either.
Right.
If it's not good, I don't want other people to read it. Then not to say that everybody's going to agree with my taste, of course not, but the bottom line is something good, put out something good, something that's worth reading.
Now, and especially now, when hardcovers, books are expensive. I mean, it's still...
Now, which brings me to the question, do you have an e-book of this yet, Death Notice?
Yes, it's available on Kindle, the iPad, the book. I think it's available on all of them.
That's pretty cool. And that, people are complaining, too, about the price of e-books, too. Like, I think one of the new ones was $14.99, which I didn't think was very expensive, but apparently I don't know. It's different with every book. You know, some people are just trying to get their name out there, so they make it really cheap, and other people are, you know, if it's a best-selling author, they can charge whatever they want, really.
Yeah, I think with Minotaur, St. Martin's, and Macmillan in general, is that you can't go any lower than... There's that whole... brouhaha earlier in the year with Amazon about the Kindle pricing. So,
right. It's interesting how the notes on the back of your book here, some of the words they have emphasized in white. I've never seen that before. I'm just looking at it now. I mean, to be able to hold this book and to read this book is something that you can never replace with an e-book in my mind. Now, people may disagree with me on that, but, you know, when I grew up, you know, when you read a book, you had a book in your hand. You could see the cover, you could see the author's picture, and you don't get that with a Kindle. And I don't think I could ever feel completely comfortable with a Kindle.
It's weird. I do have one, and I do read from it, but when I get books on the Kindle... It's honestly because I just can't carry 3 or 4 books with me on, you know, vacation.
Mm-hmm.
Or when I went to BoucherCon, there were some authors that I knew I'd be meeting there. And so I really wanted to just, okay, I want to read one by them, one by them, one by them. And just the easiest way was just, okay, load it up on the Kindle and let's go.
Well, who was the biggest thrill that you met? What author was the biggest thrill for you to meet at BowserCon?
At BowserCon, it had to be Louise Penny, who was just...
She's
insanely talented. And, you know, I stood in line to get her latest book signed. I was, you know, just a fanboy with everyone else.
Mm-hmm.
And when I took my turn, I said, you know, hi, Ms. Penny. I'm also a Minotaur author. The timing at BowserCon was my book had come out, like, the day before the conference started.
Right.
My book just came out, like, this week. And she just, like, stood up and just said, oh, my God, I got to give you a hug. Congratulations. This is such a wonderful time for you. And I was just in awe of this.
She's a really sweet lady. She really is.
Yeah.
Very, very private lady, but very sweet. And, you know, you can respect that. And she's got six books, and they're all wonderful. And I've read two of the six, but I know the others are good. I just haven't gotten to them all. But you just know by the feel of a book that the series is going to be good. I mean, you just know that. And I mean, maybe they have a miss here and there, but I don't think there's going to be any in the six. But anyway, the point is, it's nice to be encouraged by somebody who's already made it.
Yeah, it was. It made my conference, I have to say.
So what were people saying about your book at the conference? And
No one had a chance to read it yet, unfortunately. That was the blessing and the curse of having it start so soon after the book came out, because just no one had been able to read it.
Weren't you tempted to take your book and go up to everybody and say, please read my book? I mean, tell me, you must have been very tempted to do that.
Yeah, I didn't know what to do. I mean, I signed some programs, which was cool. And then toward the end of the conference, you know, one or two people had actually, you know, bought the book and asked me to sign it. They didn't have a chance to read it yet, but at next BowserCon, hopefully it'll be just, you know.
I was at the National Book Festival one year, I say two or three years ago, and I decided. This author, Craig Johnson, who I just love, said he writes books set in Montana. I decided I was going to stand by his table and sell some of his books, and I did. And you know what? It was fun because the books are really that good. And I thought, this is so much fun. I could just stand here all day and just sell his books. And I did. I was like, this is wonderful to be able to do this. You watch people, and you kind of get an idea who you can talk to and who you can't. And sometimes it's by the first sentence you'll be like, have you read any of his? And you know, and you see the look on their face, whether they're really open to you saying things like that. But it's really, when you really like a book, you just want to spread the word.
Yeah, and it's been the most gratifying part so far has been just hearing from people who just really loved this book.
Mm-hmm.
Like complete, you know, friends and family, they're sort of obligated to be like, yeah, it was really good.
Right.
And so you say thank you, but you're not really sure if they need it or not. It's when the strangers, like you get the emails from, you know, I got an email from a librarian in Indiana who just loved the book and can't wait for the second one.
Right.
That's so awesome to hear.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, how long were you an obituary writer? You've actually done that. Are you still a reporter now, or what are you doing now?
I'm a copy editor now.
Okay.
At the Star Ledger in Newark, New Jersey. Best known as, what's the biggest newspaper in New Jersey, but it's best known as the one that Tony Soprano read in The Sopranos.
Right.
He always shuffled down the driveway to pick it up.
Well, something tells me you like writing better.
Oh, yeah, like this is...
Something tells me this. I don't know what, but... You actually did write obituaries? How long did you do that?
It was part of, like, at my previous job, you know, part of my job was to edit the obituaries.
Oh,
like proofread them and make sure, you know, nothing was wrong. And that's actually one of the things that inspired Death Notice was proofreading one. The date was wrong. And whoever wrote it had said that the poor guy was going to die the next day.
Wow.
And I went, what idiot typed this up? And then I thought, hey.
What a great idea.
That's a cool idea. But so when the writing them was far different than the writing that Henry does in the book, in that, you know, it was just, here's what the funeral home gives you, type it up. There wasn't, you know, too much creativity in that regard.
Hmm. It's interesting how this kind of situations create ideas for books.
Oh, yeah.
That's really great. I mean, you think about it, writing an obituary, how exciting can that be? I mean, you make things exciting, I guess. I guess that's the point. I mean, even the most tedious jobs, some people can be exciting if they make them that way, you know? You're doing something different every day. I mean, you're writing different ones, and maybe you're trying to make them sound good.
And if the subject is interesting, and maybe the challenge is to try to take something that on the surface doesn't look that interesting, and then make their lives as interesting as they actually were.
Now, we're almost at the end here, but can you tell us the title of your next book?
Tentatively, it's titled Bad Moon.
Bad Moon.
Hopefully it will stay that way, because I really think it's a great title.
Not Bad Moon Rising, just Bad Moon.
Bad Moon, yeah.
Bad Moon. Now, I never would have... I mean, you try to think to yourself, what would the next title be? Bad Moon. It's so different. It sounds different.
And it is different, and I'll...
Now, it doesn't have anything to do with werewolves, I take it.
No.
No werewolves.
I sort of, you know, when people ask about it, I sort of give it like this, where, you know, Cat Campbell from Perry Hollow and Nick Donnelly investigate the disappearance, the case of a boy who disappeared in Perry Hollow in 1969 on July 20th, which was the night man first walked on the moon. And then they soon discover that there have been other disappearances throughout Pennsylvania when man walked on moon during the other moon landings.
I'm looking forward to reading more about Nick. I hope you find out more about him. He's not, I mean, he's in Death Notice, but he's not a central, he's not, to me, a very central character in Death Notice.
Yeah, it's what I find is fun about this is that I can sort of, you know, Cat will always be the central person, but it'll be fun in the future to sort of, like, introduce residents of the town and, or, you know, other investigators and just bring them in as necessary. You know, some of them might not be in one book, but they might be, you know, three books from now.
That's what got, I don't know why I'm thinking about this, but Star Trek Deep Space Nine, I remember when they were stuck on that. I mean, the whole series, they're stuck on that station. And you think, well, what can they do? And you bring other people in from the outside, and then it all becomes more interesting. And you can't just have the same characters every week. I mean, it gets boring. You have to bring that new blood in and new and interesting. And that's the trick to me with mystery writers is having interesting characters, having a character that people just fall in love with, like the grandmother in Janet Ivanovich's books. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, Spencer's sidekick who's so great in his books.
Yeah.
I mean, you have that character that people just love, and I think you really have to do that. You can't make everybody the same way. You've got to. I mean, Henry is interesting. Henry needs to be. In my mind, Henry needs to be fleshed out more and more every book. He's just one of those characters you instantly like when you read about him.
Yeah. Another great thing is people responded so much to these characters, and that's so nice to hear. You know, that the plot is a, you know, crackerjack plot. It's suspenseful. It's scary, but I think what a lot of people walk away from are that they really love these characters.
Right.
I really can't wait to spend time with them again.
Right. And I would think, and I read books, I think, boy, that's an interesting character, what you could do with that character. And you hope that authors do that. And I mean, it's so easy to have a mystery story that doesn't get more interesting, that just plods along and nothing happens and everybody stays the same. But that's why Louise Penny's so good. She introduces these things in people's past that you didn't know about, and you know the other characters find out, and their reaction is amazing. You know, it's just the, you know, finding these things out and what are they really like. You know, it makes reading the series. You know, give me the next one. I can't wait to read the next one.
Yeah, there's nothing more fascinating than people and how they just sort of collide with one another and react to one another.
But in my mind, the characterizations, making sure that the characters are totally three-dimensional, and making the ending totally plausible to me are some of the most important things in a mystery ever. I mean, you've got to have that. I've read a lot of mysteries where the ending didn't make much sense. I mean, suddenly, you know, the killer appears and you're like, well, what was their motivation? Why did they do it? That has to be important. That has to be told, and it's got to be believable.
Yeah, it's got to be airtight.
It can't just be, well, they started killing and that was it. And it doesn't make any sense. I mean, Patricia Cuomo did that in her first one, and all of a sudden at the end she brings a murderer in that didn't make any sense, and you didn't even know who it was before that page. And, you know, you feel cheated as a reader. As much as I love her, and I do, but, you know, it just wasn't fair to the reader.
And that's why I think what makes someone like, well, you know, early Thomas Harris so scary and so fascinating, because he devoted equal time to the killers and what made them, you know, tick, what made them do what they did.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found that terrifying, yet riveting, and, you know, can't put it down.
Right, exactly. Well, we've run out of time. This has been wonderful to talk to you, and I'm really looking forward to the second book. In fact, I'm wondering now what it's about. And of course, the new book's called Death Notice by Todd Ritter. It's out in all your bookstores now. Go and get it and read it, because you're going to love the series, and I can't wait to read the second one. Thanks so much, Todd.
Well, thank you. No, thank you. It's been great.
This has been David's Book Talk, and we will talk to you next time.